Okay, so I'll be talking about timing properties of the soft gamma repeaters. Here's a table just showing some of the basic properties. Chris has already gone over the spin periods, so I won't talk about those anymore. The spin down rates, I put question marks by 1806 and 1900 because, as Chris has showed previously, they are changing by quite a large factor. In our 1999 paper, we had measured timing noise in SGR 1806-20, calculated a so-called delta 8 or activity parameter, which has been used for the radio pulsars, and we found a value of 4.8 for 1806-20, and we now have a value for 1900+14. It happens to be the same value, 4.8. Okay, so what I'll be doing is I'll be showing a before and after picture of the spin histories of the SGRs. I'll start with 1900 and then go to 1806, and then I'll be talking about pulse profile changes for each of the sources. So this is the before picture of 1900. The bottom figure here is the period history over a few years for the source, and there are basically two epochs where the spin down rate is roughly 6.1 10 to the minus 11 seconds per second, although there are significant excursions from that value. And then there's this 80-day interval during which the average spin down rate increased by more than a factor of 2. And we suggested that there could be an alternative explanation where the spin down rate actually continued on this path and then jumped up at the time of the August 27th flare, which happened to be during that 80-day interval, but we cannot distinguish because of the frequency of the observations between that model and, say, some model where the spin down ramped up. I'd also like to point out there was a reported radio detection of SGR 1900 by Shitov, in which they measured it with the BSA, I believe, in Russia, and there was a discrepancy between the ephemeris that they found in radio and the ephemeris we found in X-ray. Well, David Palmer had noted that the BSA only observes 1900 for 200 seconds per day, and there could be strong aliasing at that frequency, and if you slip that by 2 cycles per day, you actually end up with the X-ray ephemeris. So this is very promising, because if this turns out to be correct, then we can continuously monitor the spin down rate of this SGR in radio. Okay, so that's the before picture. Now the current picture of 1900+14 is the following. Now, as I didn't mention in the previous view graph, the red histogram denotes the burst rate history as observed with BATSY. Here I've drawn the 6.1 times 10 to the minus 11 seconds per second period derivative, which obviously has changed by quite a lot. The slope here is about a factor of 4 higher than it was previously. And from our monitoring campaign with the PCA, we have a phase-connected solution over the summer of this past year where we see it beginning to turn back over again. I'd like to point out that it is not at all correlated with the burst activity, and the idea behind this change in alpha and luminosity is that it's associated with seismic activity, and the bursts are believed to be due to seismic activity, so there doesn't appear to be a correlation there. But I think Rob will address this point later in the conference. Okay, so now for 1806-20. This is the before picture. We see that the spin down rate of this SGR was changing during 1999, albeit very slight changes. And in fact, we could actually attain an adequate fit to the phases using just a simple spin down rate plus an orbital solution. We now have more recent observations, which Chris has showed earlier, which exclude the orbital solution. That's no longer a viable option, at least not with the simple spin down plus an orbit. And as with 1900+14, the spin down rate has changed by about a factor of 4. And up until the most recent observations, it's continuing to do this. And David has some Chandra observations which fall right on this line. So the Chandra observations took place during this period of enhanced spin down. Okay, so to summarize the timing noise, I've taken a figure from Arzumanian et al. On the activity parameter of a number of radio pulsars, which are given by the black circles and the inverted gray triangles. And this was first noted by Hall and Herquist back in 1999 for the AXPs, and where they found that if you extrapolate this trend you see in the radio pulsar population, they're roughly consistent. The timing noise levels that you find by analyzing the frequencies are roughly consistent with that extrapolation. Vicky Caspi has done a number of work, or has performed a lot of work on this for the AXPs, and it has increased the sample size somewhat. And the trend seems to be that actually the AXPs, in addition to the two SGRs, are above this trend that we find for the radio pulsars. Why 1806 minus 20 and 1900 plus 14 have the same value, I'm not sure if that's just a coincidence or something to do with the source, but I would like a few more occurrences of this change in spin down of factor 4 before I say anything conclusive about that. Okay, so moving on to the pulse profile changes. This has been talked around a little bit earlier in the talks this morning. The top row are observations between 2 and 10 kV of this SGR folded. These are two cycles, arbitrary intensity units. And these are taken all before the giant flare of August 27th. And I'd like to point out that this particular profile was taken after significant burst activity from the source in May and June of that year. The two middle panels are a different energy range, 25 to 150 kV, taken from Ulysses data. And I folded the first 60 seconds after the pulsations had emerged during the tail of the flare, and then folded the last 50 or so seconds of the flare. And one can clearly see this change in pulse profile taking place. This has been confirmed with other spacecraft, the BepoSax GRBM, as well as CONUS. And we see the same qualitative behavior in the persistent emission. All of these pulse profiles are, again, 2 to 10 kV and taken after this flare took place. So this is September 98 going all the way up until the summer of this year. And I'll discuss what implications this may have for the giant flare and SGRs in general near the end of the talk. Now we see the same sort of behavior in 1806-20, albeit at a lesser scale. The first pulse profile was taken at the onset of burst activity for the source in 1996. This is actually the discovery observation by Cugliotto et al. The subsequent two panels were taken after much of the burst activity had taken place, but we see the same trend, and it moves from complex to simple after the burst activity. Okay, so to quickly summarize, and then I'll talk more about the pulse profile changes. Both 1806 and 1800 have shown large variations of spin down rate by a factor of 4. Each have a delta 8 value of around 4.8. I'd like to point out neither have shown evidence for spin up. We have not detected any spin up in these sources yet. Neither have displayed evidence for binarity. We can now exclude the orbital solution originally mentioned in our 1999 paper. And both exhibit similar timing noise levels, I mentioned that. And each have shown pulse profile changes. Now, to put those pulse profile changes in context, I have here the flux history of 1900 plus 14, which was shown earlier. And the first four panels across the top for 1900 plus 14 were taken from these first four points. The next four at the bottom of that figure were taken from this set of data, this set of data, and then these two. So what this tells us is that this pulse profile change is not a function of the persistent non-burst luminosity of the source, which is what one might expect for an accretion model. So this is really another strike against accretion, because if if it were to change with luminosity as is seen in, in many accreting sources, one would expect there to be the change to occur during this time interval, not suddenly here and then not during this decay. What this may mean in the context of the magnetar model, well, we have to consider, well, what governs the pulse profile of a magnetar? It's the magnetic field strength and the geometry of the magnetic field. And in terms of the magnetic field strength, when you're talking about a magnetar, you're talking about a very large magnetic energy reservoir. And the giant flare, as large as it was, is actually not a very significant part of that reservoir. So it really, the magnetic field strength itself probably did not change. The geometry, however, I believe, may have changed during this flare. And the reasoning is as follows. We see the simple pulse profile here, and then we see the flux decay back to the quiescent level here. Moreover, we see the black body component emerge in the persistent emission again. And that tells me that we're seeing the surface again. And if we're seeing the surface, then we're seeing the surface structure, the surface magnetic field structure. And for that reason, I believe the magnetic field actually reconfigured itself. And if that's true, then we actually watched it happen during the August 27th flare, which is, I think, pretty amazing. So just to conclude, I'll put up the August 27th flare, and just so you can see that you can actually see the change within the flare. I'd just like to point out the dips here are much sharper than they are out here at the end of the flare. So you can actually see it in the data. And that's all. Thank you.
You're the first speaker to speak to finish ahead of time. Andrew.
Could you please put up again the diagram which takes the spin gap?
Mm-hmm. For which source?
Either one.
Yeah, I didn't describe it. Thank you for asking the question. So Andrew's question was about these blue lines. Why do we have lines instead of points on the graph? And the reason is these are phase-connected data. So we phase-connected a series of XT observations over a time period of, in this case, 180 days, and I think here it's about 90 days or so.
George Pavlov.
Yes.
Did you look at the dependence of the pulse shape on the quantum energy range?
No, not with that is a possibility. There could be very strong energy dependence of the pulse shape, but I find it I don't know how that can explain the change that we see in the persistent emission after the fact, and how it's persisted even after the flux decay has gone away.
First of all, that's interesting.
If there's some energy dependence. No, we haven't investigated that.
No. Okay, Omar, and then Dong, and after that, Eric. Okay, start with Omar.
Yes.
In your phase-connected RXT data, did it again materialize?
It's not quite there yet, but it's getting close.
Peter, summarize the question.
So it does seem to be a sort of average spin down rate or level that it returns to.
There could be. I don't have that. Where is that one?
You answered my question.
Okay, so here it is, actually. Just found it. So Omar's question was, is this slope here consistent with this slope? And the answer is almost. It's getting close to that slope now.
No.
But it is certainly turning over.
My question actually back to that point. If that's the case, then after some rearrangement from the infield, the P-dot actually returned the original P-dot. That's curious.
Well, yeah, that...
You have some field.
Yeah, if you had some...
Some messy stuff here, and then return to the original field geometry. Just some
Well, Dong's point is that the you know, if you had some field reconfiguration, and then that could lead to enhanced spin down. If you took if you conserve magnetic energy and went from some multipole to a dipole, it would be a more efficient breaker. And the problem with that is you would expect to see that spin down here. The August 27th flare took place right here, and we have a phase-connected series of observations phase-connected here for over 40 days, which shows a P dot, which is actually slightly less than 6.1. So I think the spin down, there's something obviously other going on than just NDR. It's something beyond that, and what it is, I don't know. So it could be dominated by some other process, the spin down.
Chris, you want to comment on this?
Regarding this issue of the redistribution,
yes, Chris has another. He already outlined his other model for it earlier today.
First of all, regarding the change in the pulse push up, tail end of time flight,
yeah.
You were able to fit the envelope of light curve nicely with the contractors so the particle. And in that picture where the four sub peaks within each rotation period were due to four factors of semi opening flux, well, in fact, as the particle cracks, it will disconnect itself from some of those. It's not at all surprising, I think, that at the end, you should only think about the quantum. Related to that is the issue of, would you expect, really, the channeling or collimation dextrose flux to be at all similar in reverse conditioning and resistance conditioning, the mass is very light. And the rate of visits is completely different.
Yeah.
So the long-term explanation for the system simplified pulse profile, even after the flux is
the trigger
is based on value, is that you have this additional local current circulating, which has enough optical depth to smooth out the X-rays.
Right.
The high voltage is still there, the hard X-ray generating
right, and that idea works in that if you have some scattering photosphere out there, it works if you can redistribute the flux in phase but leave the energy dependence alone. So you need to maintain that energy dependence, otherwise you wouldn't detect the black body component. But it works. I can't say that that's
okay,
not the
I'll
case.
Take only two more questions. Eric, and then Ferrer Lozell, please. Yeah.
I don't know that we can actually estimate the age now with the PMP dot. I don't know that it says anything about it at this point. No, I wouldn't. Not at this point. I think we've only seen a very short snapshot of the lifetime of this SGR. We've only seen a few years where we can measure the P dot, and within those few years it changes by a factor of four. So I don't know that you can extrapolate that. I wouldn't. Not 1,000 years or 10,000 years.
John, is that a comment or something?
It's a comment. I think it's really the only comment is it's in a sense trivial, but it ought to be made. This business of whether it's recovering to the original value is really important, because if you go through an event and for whatever reason it takes 100 days to recover to the original, or whatever went on, and recovers the original dipole field and goes back to standard spin down, then by looking at those regions outside of the onset and recovery, you can then do something with the ages. If everything sort of wanders off and doesn't come back to the original state, then you're absolutely right. There's not much you can do.
Yeah.
But so the answer to this question of whether there's recovery of the original field,
it's going to take time.
Quite important.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Just, sorry,
just to follow up on this cost profile.
Yeah.
In this reconfiguration of magnetic field context, when do you expect the pulse profiles to go back to the multi-peak structure that we saw before?
If the field changed at the time of the flare, then in the idea of the magnetar model, you've got magnetic stresses building up, in the crust, which creates the seismic activity, which creates the burst. So if this field is evolving over time, then eventually, you know, it could relax back to a dipole, and then stresses build up again, and then it relaxes back, and that could be reflected in the time scale of these giant flares, which seems to be roughly, as best as we can guess from the observations, about once every 100 years. So if I were to venture a guess, and it's just a guess, then I would say the time scale would be of the order of 100 years.
So if we saw a fault profile change soon, like within a year or so, does this mean that the magnetic field reconfiguration interpretation is wrong?
Well, it depends upon the ambiguity in that number of once every 100 years. You could say that it's probably, you know, I mean, not less than 20 years.
Okay.
But this is 3 years after the fact now, or no, 2 years after the fact, and we haven't seen it recover yet.
Okay. Thanks, Peter.
Okay.
Had a good discussion there. So.